Campus FM presents Talking Heads Season 3, brought to you by students of the International Master in Adult Education for Social Change.
Mindfulness. It is what Eastern mystics have been practicing for as long as history has accounts. It is said to help people shift their attention to what actually matters. And most importantly, it is believed that mindfulness can help improve our quality of life, mentally, emotionally, and physically. Can something be this good to be true? That's what we're going to be diving into for today's episode. Dialogues will be facilitated around the concept of mindfulness and its applications in education and activism. Stay tuned for the extremely interesting coming conversations with our to-be-revealed mindfulness expert and practitioners. My name is Ngoc from Vietnam, and I'm going to be your host for this episode. Thank you for joining me, and let's go ahead and welcome our first guest into the show.
Together with me here is Mr. Nguyen Phuc Hai, a current project manager at Eurasia Foundation and Association, as well as the representative of Eurasia Learning Institute. Eurasia is headed by Dr. Ha Van Thaw, the former director of the Gross National Happiness Center in Bhutan. Eurasia's flagship project at the moment is Happy Schools. The project attempts to weave the concept and practice of mindfulness into the public education system in Vietnam to create a learning environment towards equitable and sustainable development. Thank you, Ha, for joining me today. To start, I would like to ask you the most basic question, I guess. What is mindfulness to you, and what is mindfulness to the Happy Schools project?
Thank you for inviting me to join this sharing, right?
Yes.
And I would love to share about the practice of the mindfulness. That I feel is most important when I'm talking about mindfulness in education, especially with the Happy School project in Vietnam. But right now we start with the nice school in public school in Hue first, mm-hmm. and hopefully in 3 years that it will spread to many places in Vietnam.
Throughout Vietnam.
Yeah. It's based on the 3-year disconnection of the human being today, disconnect from ourselves to others and to nature. Mm-hmm. And so with the Happy School, we just help or work with the teacher and the student how to reconnect to ourselves, to others, and to nature. Mindfulness is the foundation.
Yes.
So the foundation, because in order to connect ourselves, we have to be aware of ourselves and helping by practice and aware of our breath will help us to be present moment. So as I said, in order to do anything, in order to connect with the others or to nature, we have to come back to our to home, mm-hmm. which means in our body, in our mind. Mm-hmm. So that's the mindfulness and that's the practice.
Mm-hmm. So as I understand it, one exercise that we can do to practice mindfulness is to be aware of our own breath.
Yeah, but actually you can
breathing.
Do... Yeah, but I think the mindfulness, practice mindfulness, it can be in different way. So it means you can be aware of your breath while you are doing something, even like washing dishes,
mm-hmm.
or mindful walking, mm-hmm. mindful sitting, mm-hmm. mindful eating, or you can do a mindfulness singing also.
Yes. So why do you think mindfulness would be helpful in our education system? How would it help?
Nowadays, if you look at to many big cities, anywhere around the world, and include Vietnam, all the kids living in the big city, they have no time to put attention in the learning something. And I don't think that they have fun to be in a school than playing the games and play with iPad, iPhone, or spend most of the time on screen, look at
mm-hmm.
the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So that is something really, that's a disconnection.
Like a distraction.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're saying because of the living environment that we are in nowadays, we live a very disconnected life. And as a consequence, it makes learning more difficult? Is that what you're saying?
I think also because mainly if we look back just maybe a few years ago until even today, that that the kids just want to be the best. And then we become something like they have a good job, earn the money, right? That's on the hope of the others. But we forget that not only the head is about the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And the heart is about your emotion, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also the feelings, mm-hmm, and the trust and that the belief that you also around you and that you feel safe, the community around you, you feel safe, trust the people you be with. So does it more create a way of, by the way, we come together at a school or the community? It's about the family. That's what I believe. And then it's helpful for the kids today.
Mm-hmm. So what I've gathered from what you've been saying is that you believe that mindfulness can help us to connect better with ourselves, others, and nature. And in doing so, we're able to have more productive, more fulfilling, rewarding lives, right?
Mm-hmm.
Within the Happy Schools Project, how do you bring the concept and the practice of mindfulness into these public schools?
You have to think how easy to that make people feel it's good to practice. And I said it's not only about you teaching a theory, you have to show the example.
Mm-hmm.
And the example is from my community where I work with, like the peaceful bamboo family.
Mm-hmm. Peaceful bamboo family.
Peaceful bamboo family is the community with the support for the
children people, with the special needs,
yeah,
right?
Children, the adolescent and the young others with the special needs. So because the teacher, when they come to the community and they learn about mindfulness, about connecting to self, others, and nature, also they feel they live in a community.
Mm-hmm.
Because the community embody the practice.
Mm-hmm.
So when they enter to the community, they learn from theory, the teachers learn from theory, but they also have an example of everyone in the community, our youngster, taking care, they care, and they put and they walk peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
Like as I said, the mindful walking.
Mm-hmm.
So we practice together since until today. I say must say it's 7 years or more than 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, and that the everyone believe that it's not only like the theory is something far away. It, that it's a daily life here, mm-hmm, in the community, in the peaceful mindful
family. Like a living attitude.
Yeah, a living attitude. That's the most important. That,
okay,
that they feel our youngster can do, it means everyone can do.
Mm-hmm.
So also, like the way our youngster practice is the way all students could learn.
Mm-hmm.
And when a student come to our community, they also learn how to be, how to do, how to live together.
Mm-hmm. So in a way, we can't just be mindful by ourselves. We also need to create a community.
Yeah.
That believes and practices.
Yeah, yeah, I believe that.
Do you think that it helps them truly connect?
I think because I have many times that I feel the feeling of that, but I believe that is something special when I sit in a circle together with them and hold hands and have a moment of silence, and then some of them even they share to me that they will do something meaningful or a moment that I. Some of the school kids, they also said, I will come back home and I will do something with my mom or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something make me believe that is the power of the practice.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said, with the student, they also have a moment to share.
Yes.
You know, mindfulness is the foundation to,
yes,
to invite everyone to come back first.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And to then connect,
to
like
connect,
you said.
Yeah.
That was very powerful. Thank you for sharing with me and also with our listeners the stories of your journey with mindfulness and the work that you've been doing with Eurasia in Vietnam. Thank you so much for coming onto the show. And I wish you all the best. And I wish Happy Schools in Eurasia much success in Vietnam.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Welcome back onto the show. We're going to start our second part of the episode today, and we're going to dive into another aspect that mindfulness can be potentially very useful, which is activism. In the studio today, I have with me two of my classmates from the International Master in Adult Education for Social Change, Miranda and Carolina. Hi, girls.
Hi, everyone.
You want to introduce yourself a little bit?
Yes. Hi. My name is Carolina. I'm from Costa Rica, and I'm very happy to be here.
Hi, I'm Miranda. I'm from the U.S., and yeah, super excited to talk about mindfulness today.
Thank you for agreeing to be on the show with me today. I'm really, really grateful and very excited to be talking to you about it because I know that we're all very, passionate about this topic. So to start with the basic question, I suppose, in your own perspectives, what are we talking about when we talk about mindfulness? What is it?
Well, I think for me, mindfulness is many things. Like you said earlier, mindfulness is rooted in Buddhism and Vedic scripture. So that's kind of where I learned about it. It was through yoga and through Buddhist meditation. But mindfulness is just, to me, being aware and being open and being present. And I think that can be a daily practice. That can be something you do every now and then. But true mindfulness is acknowledging yourself, being aware, losing that self-judgment, that self-negative talk, and being more open to others and more present in your everyday.
Mm, right.
Yes, I agree with Miranda. It is some sort of a practice where you become an observer and you get out of yourself. Let's say for you're living in this movie and suddenly you can become an observant of what's going on. And you can stop for a second from this busy and very distracted world and focus your attention either in your body, your mind, in one very little, like a flower in the street or like just something, a sensation, an emotion that can bring you to the present moment and to be here and now, and that is definitely something very powerful, even though it sounds very simple and vain, which is actually not.
It's quite difficult, really.
It is.
Mm, I see. Okay. You mentioned being an observer. Just want to clarify, do you mean as an observer of your own thoughts and your own mind, your action, your physicality?
Yes, exactly. We somehow get lost in so many thoughts, and these are what we can call an imposed reality. We're bombarded constantly from the media, and now we're connected with everybody through social media, and we're constantly on our phones. We're on the screens of their phones and not really paying attention to ourselves, our thoughts, and our emotions, and our bodies. In that sense, even though we're experiencing so much connection from different ways or people or artifacts, we are very disconnected with ourselves. So this is like when you become an observer in this sense, it's like you step out of yourself and see yourself from outside and try to acknowledge all of these things that make who you are.
Yeah, it's like going off autopilot, because when we're on our phones and we're doing these things, like we just continue on this level of like semi-consciousness. But when you start observing your habits, your thoughts, your patterns, why you're doing this, why are you checking your phone for the 15th time this hour? You know, like what are you searching for that you're not getting? Like just taking a moment to look at yourself. And then once you start looking at yourself, then I think you can start being more aware of others and what they're doing and how they're interacting with you and the ways in which we can open up, share, and really observe, like you said.
Okay. But like, say, as an observer, is this like an experiment, like an observer observing an experiment taking place? Does it in any way, I guess, take you away from yourself in a way? Like, do you get detached from yourself or disconnected? Because as an observer, I suppose you're seen as like a separate entity. Mm-hmm. If I'm making sense.
Yeah, I understand. Like, you become objective to some extent or neutral, maybe, but for me personally, I first started practicing mindfulness with like similar to Miranda, with yoga and with meditation, guided meditation. But also I started learning about spiritual philosophies and also other practices like the aesthetic experience. And it would always be like about coming back to the body and breathing. The first thing and one of the most important things is about our breath, is how we're breathing. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the things we do the most automatically. We need breathing. We need to breathe to be alive. And we're not doing this consciously. So when I would be practicing these guided meditations or these other experiences where you can be mindful. The first thing they would always tell you is let's start breathing. Let's be aware of how the air is coming in through our lungs and it's exhaling out of our mouth or nose. And that alone is making you an observer of how you're doing these that you do so much all the time without even noticing. Mm-hmm. So even though you're now like being aware to some extent and maybe doing it more consciously and you're making it more like on purpose, let's say, it is still you. It is very much how you breathe. It is very much how your body feels. And then also along with these practices, I would have facilitators telling us to be aware of like how is it like be aware of your body. Like, do you feel uncomfortable right now? Is there a pain anywhere? Are you hungry? Is anything itching? So these little things that we cannot really control too much, we don't really pay attention to them. And this is the beginning of the process of becoming an observer of yourself. Then with time, it grows to these other levels, let's say in layers of awareness, like Miranda was saying, where you can experience how you feel when somebody's talking to you, or how you feel like, or what your emotions or sensations are when you're in other situations.
I see. Okay. And for me, it doesn't take me out mm-hmm. of the situation. Is that kind of what you mean? Like, mm-hmm. by being an observer, I don't feel disconnected.
Yeah.
If anything, I think I feel more connected. Mm-hmm. Like, think about how many times you've, like, spoken to someone, and maybe, have you ever even noticed, like, the color of their eyes, or like, are you watching their body language? Are you really present in that moment? Like, because when you start being mindful, it puts you more in the moment rather than taking you away from it. You may be like Definitely. Observing and noticing more, but yes. you're not separated from it. By observing and noticing it, I feel more connected.
All right.
Definitely.
Okay. So I would assume, right, that you're both identify as activists to some extent, right? Given that you're in this program about social change. Yeah. Am I assuming
yes.
Correctly?
Yes, I like to think it's a different kind of activism to that is generally perceived, but yes.
All right. Do you think that your practice of mindfulness has helped you in your activist work in any capacity, in any way?
I think so. For me personally, like these issues that we're dealing with are quite triggering, right? Like racism, sexism, you know, environmental issues, like just to hear like the language that's used when we're talking about it, when we're trying to change opinions or open up conversations, like, it's really hard to be neutral and to be calm and to let those conversations go. But mindfulness has taught me like to be calm, to listen, to take a breath. And it's really helped me be able to give the other person space before I then become the activist, you know, like to really understand why they are like they are and why that is important too. That's equally valid, but like how we can work on it together. But by being calm and being rational and not being hyper reactive, I think that's the best way it's helped me personally.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Carolina?
Well, mindfulness is for life, and it would help anyone and anywhere. And to me personally, it really helped me, like we have mentioned before, to connect, to be a little more aligned, mind, body, heart, and be a little more coherent and congruent, or at least strive to be like that. So my activism is I try to, you know, try as much as I can to walk the talk. And with mindfulness and in these settings, and what Miranda mentioned right now, just talking about all of these very controversial, conflictive, and very sometimes painful topics, mindfulness helps me like to come and go, I like to say. It's like I'm here and present. I am acknowledging all these social injustices and these issues that we're troubled about. But I also need to go back to this other place where, yes, this is life right now. The day is beautiful, or I'm really grateful for this glass of water I'm having, or this really nice conversation right now with you girls. It's like this is something that we have to be reminded of all the time so that don't go crazy.
I actually read this really interesting article last night, and it was saying how mindfulness is proven to help activists because there's a big problem with activist burnout. So, mm-hmm. you know, like activism is often so selfless and it's so time consuming, and it can be quite depressing when you don't actually see the change. You keep running into these same barriers, but they have proven that acts of mindfulness like meditation, yoga, walking meditation, Tai Chi, mm-hmm. all of these like slowing down, opening up, being mindful, all these activities help reduce activist burnout, which then helps movements go farther, last longer.
Mm-hmm. So like helps you stay sane in a way.
Yeah. It recenters you, you know, like definitely. Makes you reevaluate, like the world, like you said, can be difficult, but I'm still here. There's still good. There's still time.
Mm-hmm. We definitely have to, say that it's very important that it really helps reduce stress. Mm-hmm. Then no wonder why mindfulness is being used in schools, mm-hmm. prisons, workplaces, and in pregnancy. dealing with, you know, so it's something that definitely should be incorporated everywhere.
Yeah, because stress causes violence, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost a direct contributor to violence. Stress heightens emotions, it heightens reactionary tendencies. So by reducing that stress and being able to breathe, like, that takes the heat out of the moment and allows a slow, civilized understanding that's often lost whenever we're really, really tense, not thinking and just reacting.
Yeah, I mean, especially in the, I suppose, the overall generally very hostile, oftentimes divisive atmosphere of activism, right? Because it seems like for activism, you're always trying to push for something that might not be favored, or to try to spread awareness or spread information. And there always seems to be that hostility, anger and like aggression. So I suppose.
I think all change is scary, right? I mean, if it weren't, we would do it more frequently. So when something is scary, it causes a reaction, like I was just alluding to, like, and that reaction is then what causes the anger, the violence, all of those things. So calming of reactions is really important. Like, I don't know if you guys have been following, I know we have the Extinction Rebellion that's happening in London right now. They're using a lot of mindfulness techniques and nonviolence, which is part of mindfulness. And they're protesting climate change and the extinction of, you know, humankind and the environment. But they're doing it in a very peaceful, mindful way. And it's been going on for, do you guys know how long?
No.
No, it's been at least a couple of weeks. And they're,
oh yeah,
like, bringing so many people onto their side because they're doing it in a peaceful, calm, and mindful way. Like, they're disrupting traffic, but not too much. Just enough to make a statement. And then they go back. You know, they're working with Hare Krishna. They're doing all of these things, bringing the community in. But because they're doing it mindfully, slowly, and without causing reaction and taking time to listen and acknowledge and speak to people, it's really interesting.
Shifting,
you guys haven't looked it up.
Shifting, protesting for some extent, instead of, you know, maybe going to the streets really angry with Molotov bombs and like.
But part of mindfulness, I think, is understanding why those people are doing that. You know, like, we have a right to be angry. Things happen that, like, we don't suffer injustices in the same way that a lot of other people do. Like, we don't know what it's like to be that angry.
Yeah.
But that's part of
that's
mindfulness.
That's really important because it is not about not being angry or sad. And it's not about dismissing these feelings. All feelings are valid. And we're all humans that feel all feelings, and we need to. Mindfulness is not about being peaceful and happy all the time. It is about seeing these feelings and incorporating them into our lives and just having a little bit more control.
I guess within the Buddhist teaching, or like Eastern thought, there's this saying or this line of thought where it is stressed that good and bad are both necessary. So both negative
yin
or
yang.
Positive feelings, yeah, yin yang. Both positive and negative feelings are essential to the human mind, the human heart. The thing is, I think within the concept of mindfulness as well, what they want to focus on is how we transform those emotions into productive actions or right actions. So I guess my next question would be, what do you think would be good takeaways for the activist community, given examples of the rebellion, extinction rebellion.
Don't forget,
sorry,
they're holding out strong. It's really, I mean, they're everywhere and they're doing like amazing, amazing protests, and they're not getting enough coverage. So, Extinction Rebellion.
And I guess I have one last question, the most important question, last but not least, given its potential to help people come to term with their realities and empathize with others, because you mentioned connection earlier, bring people together. Do you think that mindfulness will bring about world peace?
The heavy question.
You know, the best for last, the most important one question.
Carol, take it away.
Well, I do think that in general, we can think about how we are now connected through social media, and everybody can like hear these news about Extinction Rebellion or other things. And information is now being spread out really quickly. And these knowledge, this ancient knowledge, which was kept very much like a secret, is now out there. And I believe that we can say, like, to some extent, human consciousness is being slowly rising through all of these different information exposures or practices. So I'm not sure if like we'll be able to see that, but I think it will definitely shift our mentality and our interactions. And it is already happening. So many changes are happening really quickly. We don't like to, or some people don't like to admit them, but veganism, equalitarian marriage, and so many radical actions are being taken place, and I think they will continue, and I like to think that they will continue happening.
Mm-hmm. Heading towards that direction.
Yes, yes. Okay.
Yeah. Miranda?
Well, I would say, like, the more we study the psychology of adults, you know, that kind of thing, like if we talk about Maslow or Jarvis, these, like, transformational learning theories, they all believe that the way to transform, which if we're talking world peace, is a transformation. You all have to start with yourself, with self-reflection.
Reflection, with, yeah. Deep
right?
Reflection,
so yeah. I think mindfulness is a really, really amazing tool if you want to get to know yourself and to know how you react and to lessen those reactions or just be more in control of them. So, yeah, I would say that transformation starts with yourself. You can't be a good friend, a good student, a good partner, a good any of these things until you're okay. So I think mindfulness is important because it helps you be okay. And when we're all okay, the world would be a much more peaceful place.
Because we're all connected.
All right. Yeah. I think I'm just really stoked that Eastern Indigenous knowledge is getting its place in the world.
Yes, and we should give
credit. It has always been there. And
2,000
some people,
plus years old, at least.
Yeah, but it's no longer...
It's like getting the recognition that it deserves.
And incorporated in Western Eurocentric education, you know, this is something that is very, very... To me, it was very surprising and impactful, and it's very exciting because it's no longer the hippies or the crazy communities, you know, or that are the ones doing this. It's something that is actually validated as very useful, very life-changing, and that very necessary for today's world.
But we also need to make sure we don't necessarily make it overly scientific, right? Like, these are rooted in spirituality. These are actualities. Like, we can prove and justify all we want, but at the end of the day, like, it is a Eastern philosophy that doesn't need to be proven by Western measures.
I agree.
Well, I guess we'll leave that to the practitioners themselves. Thank you, girls, for coming on the show with me today. It was a very interesting conversation.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah,
we're always happy to talk about these things.
Definitely.
I know you are. I know you are. All right. Thank you, everyone. Thank you to our listener for joining us today for this episode. I had a blast, and I think Miranda and Carolina had a blast as well. If you are interested in finding more about the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, also known as the IMASC, please go to www.gla.ac.uk. To follow the journey of the third cohort of the IMASC, visit our blog at imask-unmasked, that is unmasked.squarespace.com. That's it for this week. Please tune in the coming weeks to follow us on our adventures. Thank you and have a great day, everyone.